We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented. It's as simple as that.
We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
Go on without me. Just go!
A good soldier never leaves a man behind.
Because I wouldn't give you 2 cents for all your fancy rules if behind them they didn't have a little bit of plain, ordinary, everyday kindness.
Life, finds a way.
Welcome to Silver Screen Biases. Each week we pick a movie off of IMDb's top 250 and dig into it. We're examining truth claims in critically acclaimed movies while also examining our own biases. I'm Nelson.
This is Jeff.
And this week,
Children of Heaven.
This episode is brought to you by our community on Patreon. They make this show happen, and you can help. Links to our Patreon and merchandise are in the show notes. Now back to the show.
What up, bro?
Hey, Jeff.
Oh, man.
It's only been a couple days, but it feels like a lot longer since I've seen you last.
It's, yeah. Time moves slow when we're apart.
Yeah.
January's almost over, man.
No.
I mean, for this episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm talking into the future.
You said that, and I actually checked the calendar because, like, there's no way.
No. Like, for the future.
Yeah. To the audience.
We're almost 1 month in.
To the audience, if you're listening to this now, which you are, yeah. January's almost over.
And you're not listening to it now.
It already is over. This.
Yeah. But it's crazy. It's crazy. January is my least favorite month. So.
Why is that?
I hate winter. I hate darkness.
Yeah.
I hate cold. I hate driving in darkness and winter and cold.
Mm-hmm.
I hate layers. I hate wearing multiple sets of clothing.
Yeah.
I hate winter. Did I say that?
I like winter. I like cold. I like layers.
No. I hate it. It's beautiful. Like, I want...
If there's snow.
Yes. I want to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Like, I wish I was the one who was like, yes, winter, let's go be outdoors. But like, I don't. Like, so one of my bucket list goals this winter is not only to take our daughter out and do some sledding, but for me to do some outside physical things in the snow to see if I can change my opinion about it. But we haven't had snow yet. As of recording yet, we haven't had substantial amount of snow yet.
One thing that always frustrates me as we get into the winter time is how many old heads I see saying, oh, I really hope we don't get snow this year. I'm like, come on. Kids want snow. Give the kids snow.
Not all kids.
Pray for the... How many kids do you know that don't want snow?
It was me.
They want snow days.
Here's the thing. Yes, I wanted snow days as a kid. Absolutely. I loved the idea of waking up and going, aren't school is called, no school.
Yeah.
But I was also the same kid that did not want to go outside and touch the stuff. I just wanted it to get me out of school, and then that's it.
Yeah.
I didn't like going out in it. I didn't like putting on coats back in the day. I didn't like having to take boots off when you got, like, I didn't like having, just like all the work that comes with winter.
Where's your sense of wonder?
Summertime.
Mm.
It's in summer.
I'd rather be cold than hot.
Mm. I'd rather be sweating.
Because I can always put on another layer, but I can only get so naked.
Legally.
And also physically. Once I'm fully naked,
you're not wrong.
I can't get more naked.
I would rather be sweating than shivering. But yeah, so like I did like snow as a kid only for the fact that it missed snow days. I didn't care if it didn't snow on Christmas. I didn't care. Like,
it always bumps me out when I see people like, yeah, but I just don't like driving. And it's like, well, it's not all about you. Pray for snow. Kids,
you're right.
Love snow.
And again,
it's for the kids.
That's
the
me. These are my opinions. My desire, though, is to like to be one that appreciates it.
Because
I do admire the people that are like this.
Yeah, where I grew up, like I'd have snow.
That's right. You're Canadian. You're a snowman.
Mid November through till March.
Yeah,
and I loved it. And even then,
and like winter time always brings along sickness as well. Like just the idea of sickness. Like it's cold season. It's flu season. Like there's always just like this more cautiousness attitude towards winter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, like this is my perspective. I know that's not the reality. Like, I know good, like, I know things need to die. And like, I know the seasons need to reset for things to be, for growth to come. Like, so I get why we have it. And like, I don't think I would enjoy living in a place without winter because like, I appreciate summer so much more, but I hate winter while I'm in it.
When I lived in Guatemala and Honduras,
you mean Guatemala?
Guatemala.
Guatemala.
It's springtime year round. And
did you like
no
no
I got into a deep funk because
did the time did the
seasons
did the I day length change though
no
okay so like, it's like maybe it didn't like, fluctuate so, as much as
first of all they don't do daylight savings
right
so like, there's that but also because you're so close to the equator it's like a half hour difference
okay
and even then it's like you can set a watch for the sun to go down because it'll be daylight. And then, right now, okay, within the next 15 minutes, it'll be dark.
Okay.
Like, it's that fast.
And it, but the gap of change over the 365 days is minor compared to us in North America. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's fascinating. Like, I would love to go to Alaska. And
in the summer? Would you go for the longest day?
I would love to experience it. And I would love to see what a 24-hour night it looks like. Like, I would like to see both.
I'd have to take an extra dose of Lexapro that day.
just to experience things, but like, I want to experience things, but I do have a little bit of sense of adventure. My sense of winter adventure doesn't exist in Ohio. Like, if someone said, hey, we're going out to Colorado, I'm going to go snowboarding and skiing.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll be there. Absolutely, let's do it.
My biggest gripe about Ohio is, especially where we are in Ohio.
Yeah.
Because I remember about a month ago, we had a big snow.
Yeah.
And I drove, and I got 5 minutes outside of town in any direction, there was snow.
Yeah.
And in our town, there was none.
Nothing.
And it makes me actually angry.
Yeah. Yeah, Lindsay had a snow day yesterday, but it was because of rain that was freezing. But by the middle of that day, it was 45
just,
degrees.
Yeah, and slush.
So like, it's just weird. Ohio is weird.
Yeah,
like it's got
the flavor of a water chestnut.
Yeah, I like that we see all
four
seasons.
It's not
too
crazy, and it's not the best, but we're not setting forest fires just out of boredom.
Right. We don't have earthquakes, so. But
I really expected you to finish the lyric.
Oh, I don't. I didn't know the lyric.
Oh. I'm surprised you're not familiar with Reliant K, Jeff.
Oh, so I didn't catch. What was it again? I didn't catch
the thing you were saying. Ohio has the flavor of a water chestnut. It's not too crazy and it's not the best, but we're not setting forest fires just out of boredom. Yeah, I'd go and see a movie if, in fact, I could afford one. Because a small town is like a small stage for teenagers and their drama. Instead of playing shows, we'll be showing plays like 90210 without the Beverly Hills.
Now we can't make money on this episode. Thank you.
Don't you think it's high time that we get out of this town? Get out of this town.
They have a song almost on every album that references Ohio.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I wonder why.
They've hinted towards some music this year.
Interesting.
I am a big Reliant K fan, but that specific
don't
song.
Recognize
I recognized it once you got deeper into the lyrics, but like that wasn't one of the songs I clung to.
Mm.
But yeah, no, I saw them this within the last 6 months. I saw them this year. Anyways, Children of Heaven. Man, this movie. I'm assuming you never saw this one before.
This is a first for me.
Yeah, same here. Let's do some stats and then we can
get into initial impressions
and talk about impressions. Yeah. So, Children of Heaven,
mm-hmm.
1997.
That's right.
Man, I wish the next part also rhymed with heaven or seven, but it doesn't. An hour and 29 minutes. Evan. Directed by Majid Majidi, which is a sweet name.
Actually, I believe it's an Iranian name, not Swedish.
Oh. You know, I thought that was interesting. He did not look anything like a Swede. Yeah, it was fascinating. Rated PG.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this right up front. I didn't recognize any other movies he did. Mm-hmm. I also didn't recognize any other cast members.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, as far as those stats go, unless you have something to add with those... No, I got nothing.
No, in fact, the only person in the cast who has like additional acting credits was the father.
Really? The son didn't go off to do anything?
No.
The son was the character I enjoyed the most in this.
Yeah.
His facial expression. I know not we're going to get into
that kind of stuff later.
Yeah,
but
we'll get there.
That kid could sell sad and heartbroken so well.
Absolutely. That was my favorite part of this movie. Not that he was sad, but that it was believable.
I liked that he was sad.
Oh. You liked that an Iranian boy was sad?
Yeah.
You know, he was around 7 or 8 years old, right?
No, he was 9.
He was 9? Okay. So he's...
Same age as my daughter.
Well, not in 97.
No.
How old was your daughter in 97?
So actually, interesting. He's the same... That actor is the same age as my wife.
Same age now as your wife. Okay.
Yeah. My wife was 9 in 97.
Okay. Because I was 7 in 97. So I was close to... Yeah. However, I did not live in Iran, so...
I ran so far away.
Now we can't make money on this episode. That's a great song. So yeah, there's that. 1996, we did the movie Fargo. Came out in 96 in America. Mm-hmm. In 1997, we did Princess Mononoke. Mm-hmm. So that movie came out the same year as this. And in 98, we did Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
So a couple, like we're getting some movies within the late 90s. Yeah. That we're getting into. There's some in 95, but I don't want to mention. I don't want to just list off movies. So I'm just doing the year before or after. But we've done stuff in 95 as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like it's a good couple years for movies on the top 250.
Yeah.
Do you know if this movie is based on a book or some sort of writing or literature?
No, it was written by Majid Majidi. Did I get that right?
You did. You did. Let me check. Yeah. The playback sounded great.
Yeah, wrote and directed. It was an original concept. There's two movies on the top 250 that for me felt similar to this.
We haven't seen them.
I've read synopses of a lot of the movies on the top 250. Okay. So I'm just going to read directly from critical reception because as I was reading this after I watched the movie, I was like, hey. That's what I was thinking, and that made me feel...
Were you reading your own articles again?
Yes. Made me feel smart. So, critical response to the film was highly positive. Some critics compared it to Vittorio De Sica's Bicycle Thieves, 1948, which we will get to.
Oh.
Roger Ebert's review in the Chicago Sun-Times called it very nearly a perfect movie for children. That lacks the cynicism and smart mouth attitudes of so much American entertainment for kids and glows with a kind of good-hearted purity. In 1998, it became the first Iranian film to be nominated for an Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film, losing to the Italian film Life is Beautiful by Roberto Benigni. Life is Beautiful, also in the top 250.
Okay.
The majority of its U.S. earnings came after the nomination was announced. After the film had become well-known worldwide due to the Oscar nomination, it was shown in several European, South American, and Asian countries between 1999 and 2001.
Okay, what did you think of this movie?
I thought this movie had so much heart. I really liked it.
I'm going to feel like a dirtbag after my opinion.
I've never been so emotionally invested in a foot race in a movie so before.
Are you serious?
And that foot race... was easily twice as long as it needed to be. But even still, I was
it
like...
It went on for like 20 minutes.
Even still, I was like, I want him to win. And like, he's gained. I'm like, yeah. And then he starts to fall behind. I was like, no. And I was like, he's going to come in first place and it's going to be tragic because he wants to be third. And then like, he gets to first and he's like, I was like, he doesn't know if he's in first or not because it could be kids way in front of him. And he starts to fall behind. I was like, he's not sure. I loved this movie. So much heart, so charming, so lovely. And I'm really glad that we watched it. I wouldn't have watched this otherwise.
I'm a dirtbag. This movie, it's not the worst movie we've watched.
But it's certainly the most Persian movie we've watched.
Yeah, that is correct. It was basic. Like, I don't know how to just...
I know what you mean.
It felt like
you're not
a
wrong.
School project mm-hmm. film.
I know
like,
what you mean.
It's okay. I didn't disagree with the goal of it. Like, right. so it's not like I hated the premise of it, but like the acting was not great.
It was serviceable.
Yeah,
except for the boy, which I thought was very, very good.
This movie felt like a student project.
Yeah,
and somehow like it just watching it, I could never pinpoint the reason on why this got on the eyes of critics.
So like I felt the same way. I felt like so much of this movie was very
it wasn't cinematic. Like no. There was no like big picture feeling to it. Like
not a lot of big risks. The movie just grabbed me.
The dialogue was simple. Yep. Like it wasn't these deep, heavy monologues of like life, liberty, and the pursuit of wait, that's an American thing. I struggled to like to get past the fact that this is a movie that probably nowadays a junior hire could make for a school project. With the technology that's available, like a junior hire could make so as I'm watching this, let me scoot back here. As I'm watching this, I started to question like, okay, am I missing something? Like is there something about the shoes that's deeper and like this movie's actually super
layered.
Spiritual and super like meta and soups no. like just like and I'm like no it's not it's just no, about it's just about a dang it's pair just, of shoes
is at, what it is it's the plot kind of meanders too, similar to like Catcher in the Rye or Perks of Being a Wallflower, where it's not really like there's not
okay I've seen Perks of Being a Wallflower and this movie is nothing like Perks of Being a Wallflower.
No, you misunderstand.
I guess
some movies have a very strong narrative arc, right? Like, here's the problem, here's the climax, here's the resolution, the stakes are big. Like, but this, like, there was just like a lot of times where like it didn't actually drive what was happening, wasn't driving you to the conclusion of the story. And a lot of times. And yet, I became more and more emotionally invested as the movie went on. Now, here's something that might be part of it. And I don't think it is, though, because of what I saw from like critic responses in America. What I saw in this movie as far as like the disparity between poverty and wealth, also even like the architecture, so much of this movie actually really reminded me of my time in Honduras and Guatemala. Remarkable.
They're not similar regions, right? Like I'm geography illiterate, but you're talking like South America versus the Middle East. Central America versus the Middle East.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
And yet so much of the culture was similar. So much of the architecture was similar. So much of what the poor areas and the wealthy areas looked like and behaved like was similar. It was really remarkable.
Did it make you feel like,
and
was there aspects of it that felt comfortable to you? Like
familiar,
like familiar and like,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. And interestingly, I was about to comment on it and Jen, who watched it with me, she's like, this reminds me of my childhood.
Did your wife watch it with you too? Or was it just Jen?
Jen and my wife. Also, Jen was there. And she's like, this reminds me of my childhood. And she would have been the age of the boy at the time of this. Mm-hmm. Her family was more. I'll probably talk about this more when we have the wives on.
Couple weeks.
Her family has full-time help. My wife grew up with maids, gardeners, etc. And they couldn't actually afford them. And they didn't do it because it was like, I have to have this because people expect it of me because I'm a white person. It's, I have the means to help them and give them the dignity of work. And we see a snapshot of that when they go do gardening.
Do gardening, yeah.
And the grandfather gives him way too much money for the work he did. Because he allowed him, it's charity and dignity at the same time. And I think that's really interesting. It's not something that's super explored in the movie, but you just get the snapshot of it. But we still have a lot of stats about this movie to talk about because we jumped way ahead.
We did. So let me go back to my sheet here. All right. So 8.2 out of 10 on the IMDb.
Yeah.
As of recording.
I think that's a remarkable score for this.
I absolutely agree.
Honestly, I'd give it a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. So I guess 8.2 is not that far off from where I'd rank it.
That's insane.
Yeah.
It's currently 181 on the top 250.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the history of this movie on the top 250?
So this is going to be a really interesting thing. I fell down a bit of a rabbit hole here.
I like rabbit holes. So it I also like holes of rabbits.
It debuted at 106 in May 2016. 20 okay. years after so when it came out.
250 started.
Was 96.
96. Okay. But when did it debut on the top 250?
May 2016.
Oh, okay.
20 years later.
Okay.
And it debuted at 106. It didn't climb up to 106. Its first time on the list, 106, May 2016.
It's a little odd. I would be intrigued by why,
It slowly fell to 140 by February of 2022. And then from February to March, it has a sudden drop from 140 to 177. This is not the first time that we've seen a massive change in a movie's score on the 1st of March. And this was, however, the first time that I thought, hey, I need to give this another look. So the website that we use to track history on the top 250.
WikiLeaks.
Yeah. thank you, Julian Snowden. Assange. Yeah, no, Snowden was a different – that's a different story. People get them conflated a lot. But you can go back to specific days and see what was the overall change on this day. So I'm going to read to you new entries. So some of these movies had been on the top 250 before and are returning, but all of these movies weren't on the top 250 the day before, but now are on the 1st of March, 2022. Jaws, The Terminator, Wizard of Oz, Groundhog Day, Exorcist, Ratatouille, The Incredibles, The Best Years of Our Lives, Grapes of Wrath, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, Sound of Music, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, Gandhi, The Help, Donnie Darko. Now,
all were immediately put on the top 250 on a specific day.
That's right.
That is intriguing.
March 1st, 2022. Now, all of these movies had been previously on the top. Oh, actually, let me double check that. Let me confirm that that's honest. Yeah, all of these movies had been previously on the top 250, but had fallen off. And then suddenly, on the 1st of March, they're all back on. Donnie Darko was only on for like a day, but they're all back on. And I couldn't see in there any kind of trend. But the trend reveals itself when we look at the movies that disappeared. So all of these movies were on the top 250 at the end of February. The next day weren't. Stalker, which was made in the Soviet Union. Z, which was made in France. And Hadoon, which was made in India. Hatsutonaten, which was made in India. Gangs of Weisepur, India. Koi no Katachi, Japan. Fa Yong Ninwa, Hong Kong. Eskaya, Japan. Kimetsu no Yaiba, Mugen Resha Hen, Japan. Kaze no Tane no Naushika, Japan. Drishyam, India. Andrei Rublev, Soviet Union. Yadinchi Kogutsaki Muchize, Japan. Hera Ferry, Japan. Neon Genesis Evangelion, The End of Evangelion, which is the English version of that title. Thank you. And also Japan. 96. France, I believe. Let me double check that. India.
Same thing.
Now do you see the trend?
Stop talking gibberish or just stop talking. Now I feel like I've regained my Reliant K status.
Yeah.
So they wiped the board with a bunch of international films, except for this one.
Well, this one.
This one came on.
No. This one had a sudden drop.
Massive drop.
But didn't fall off.
Didn't fall off. So it was higher than all the other ones. Okay. So they wiped the board clean with international films and brought on domestic films.
Well, we've talked before about how is the top 250 curated. And it's algorithmically. And one of the parts of the algorithm is the verified user. And they don't disclose what that means. But there is some suspicion that they favor American audience. I think that this, what happened on the 1st of March, is pretty damning evidence that yes, they do weight it in favor of North American audiences.
Yeah, that would make it pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we can look through changes that happened that day, because it's not uncommon for movies to shift up one or two or drop one or two. But then you look through the movies that had a big, like, that shifted that day, and there's movies that shifted by like 15, 20, 30. All of them foreign language films. They just dropping quick.
So changed the algorithm of which the weight that the international movies carry when it comes to being on the top 250.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes, it's got an 83%.
There was one more thing I was going to add.
Whoa, bring it on. Lay it on me. Put it in my pocket. I want to hear it. Let me have it. What do you got?
One of two Iranian films in the top 250.
The other one you mentioned already, right?
No. The other one I did not. It's called A Separation.
Okay, and it's not by Majid Majidi. Mm-mm. Okay.
So there's only ever been two. And these are the two, and they're both on right now.
Okay.
So it's this one and A Separation. I don't know for a fact, but I think I've seen A Separation before. And when we watch it, I'll be able to confirm that. I also reached out to a friend of mine who is Iranian. He's first-generation American. I reached out to a couple friends, only got a response from one of them, who call themselves Persian, because it's kind of a coin flip when you talk to an Iranian, whether they call themselves Iranian or Persian. The one that did respond, he's like, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't comment on it, but send me a link to your podcast. Nice. So we might have him on in the future, especially if we get to, I'd love to have Noah, if you're listening, I'd love to have you on for A Separation.
That'd be great.
To get your Persian insights on that film.
I also saw a documentary about the Prince of Persia with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal, yeah.
Yeah, it was very, very interesting.
Who's in Donnie Darko, which we previously mentioned.
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are all facts. Rotten Tomatoes, 83% on the tomato meter, 95% in the audience. People just love this movie. What's the budget for this film?
$180,000, which would be $340,000 today.
That's a lot. That is way more than what I was expecting.
There's a lot of, you got to pay your actors. There's a lot of extras in this. You got a bunch of kids running. I'm sure all those kids got some pocket money out of this.
I'm not going to say that on the podcast.
I'll cut it.
Don't they do a lot? What's their child labor laws over there? Are they different?
We got child actors in America that get paid.
I was saying, like, so they don't pay them over there is what I was
implying. Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
That's more than I was expecting.
Child labor, so long as those kids are being paid.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, pay your workers.
Yeah,
pay them. You know what? Yeah. They should go on strike.
Yeah. Did you know?
The kids should join a union.
That child labor basically disappeared in America even before they outlawed it. You'll see union activists bragging that unions are what got rid of child labor. But child labor was basically non-existent in America by the time they outlawed it, because all of those kids' families were now doing well enough that they didn't need the child's income as well, and those kids could go to school.
There you go.
There you go.
Peanut gallery on the 250. Any?
Ooh, I should have had that open.
Ooh. Well, that's it, folks. That's the episode.
At this point, 100% of people who responded said, no, it would not be in their top 250.
Okay, there you go. I want to run some by you.
I don't think my wife responded, though, and I think it would be in hers. Okay. So.
I want to run some by you. This movie, obviously, like, comes from Iran, and you said it's a Muslim country?
It's a Muslim family. At this point in history, it was an Islamic state.
Okay.
I believe it might still be, but at this specific point. And so in 1997, they had a new leader elected. The leader that was in charge when the movie was made, and they actually have a scene where they're venerating Dear Leader, he had been in charge since 1989. He was the supreme leader of Iran, and he had made it into a Muslim state and dramatically reformed the country to be much more conservative and Muslim and all that comes with that. He had some terrible economic policies, though, which usually comes with any sort of authoritarianism. It's really, really, really hard times for people's wallets.
Yeah. this movie isn't necessarily a Christian, like a Muslim movie. Like the point of this movie isn't to promote the faith.
No.
Of the family or the faith of the director. Like,
no.
So like this is not a, what would be a faith-based film.
Right.
For the audience.
But it is a, it'd be like saying that best years of our lives are actually more like It's a Wonderful Life is a Christian movie.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a Christian movie, but there are Christian elements in it because the people making it, the culture it's being made in, all of that is a quote-unquote Christian culture.
Yeah.
The scene where the father is crying while pouring tea, he's crying while singing along to prayer.
A prayer, yeah.
So clearly he's a devout man, but this is a culture where, I don't know this for a fact, so check me in the comments, but I think at the time, like, it was like, Islam was required by law within Iran. So
yeah, I can't verify that, but this movie, because of, okay, it has nothing to do with the religious aspect of what I'm about to say, but while watching this film, I kept comparing it to how I felt about like modern Christian movies today in America, like the underacting, the low budget, the, again, correct me if I'm wrong, critique me, like just like, but like I just kept getting feels of like, okay, this is like, this is a very cheaply, poorly done movie that's trying to give you a feel-good feeling at the end. Mm-hmm. And like, as a Christian, I like the idea of movies that have depth that lead you to God.
Right.
I like the idea of that. But most Christian movies that I've seen that are like blatantly Christian.
Yeah, they suck.
Christian director, like, they're horrific.
Yeah.
And I kept getting those vibes from this. Like, it just like acting's terrible. Like, they're trying to sell an emotion, not a story. They're trying to sell a specific value, not a story. Like, like I just kept getting that. Like, so like, I couldn't help but compare this to a movie like Fireproof, Courageous, War Room, Facing the Giants. Like all these movies that I've seen and I've tried to give a chance to, I'm going, hire good actors. Take chances.
Yeah.
Take some risks.
Do you know why
Be
they
a
don't?
Little bit of edgy. Like,
do you
at
know why
depth,
they don't, though?
Why don't they? You know this for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
You've interacted with people that make these films.
I have.
And they, okay, I'm eager to hear this. Because I'm skeptical, but I'm eager to hear
this. Yeah, so movies are expensive.
What? Right?
Even
this one only took
$108,000. $340,000. That's like, you got to fundraise that.
That's one actor's salary in a big budget movie now.
That's way less than one actor's salary.
I was trying to be optimistic. Yeah.
RDJ gets millions per movie.
As he
and
should.
Good for him.
Good global. He got the Golden Globe.
You know, I won't begrudge a man for making money.
Yeah.
Honestly. So the reason why it happens is you got to fundraise. And people who have deep pockets, they want to say in what happens. That's why Christian movies almost always are going to have a repentance and turn to Christ scene. That's why Christian movies are almost never going to have strong language. That's why Christian movies are never really going to grapple with difficult themes, things that people actually experience in day-to-day life. And that's the biggest failing of these. And usually they want to, and they say, hey, this is the movie we're going to make. And the donor is like, hey, I love that movie, but can we take out that drug scene?
And
can we take out those swear words? I'm really not comfortable with that. In fact, I'd be more comfortable if we do this instead. Hey, I got a great idea. Let's try this. Yeah. And it's just too many hands in the pot. However, that is changing. With crowdsourcing, you don't need donors with big pockets because you can get lots of donors who are willing to chip in $5 here or there.
Are you saying there's a Christian movie out there that has depth to it that I need to watch that you've seen so far that's a different movie?
What I'm
that's
saying,
not God's Not Dead, 1, 2, or 3.
I love Kevin Sorbo. Put some respect on his name.
Oh my god, he's in all of them. He's in every Christian movie.
Yeah, Kevin Sorbo's the man.
Oh, he's a man. Yes. he's welcome on the show. But like,
who's the other one that's in every Christian movie? He did Fireproof.
Kirk Cameron. Kirk Cameron, man.
I want the two of them to do a buddy cop movie. Just like a lousy, cheesy Christian buddy cop.
Christian cops. God's. We should write it. We could probably do a movie With the budget you and I do this podcast for, we could probably afford Chris Sorbo or whatever his name is.
What?
Kevin Sorbo. Kevin Sherbert.
So before Fireproof, there was one that came out that was about Facing the cops. Giants.
Oh, Courageous.
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 One of my all-time favorite scenes in a Christian movie, because it's so cheesy. It's so bad.
The gang?
No, no, no. Oh,
because like I've seen a lot of these.
Two of the police officers are fighting. And Jen and I were doing missions work when we saw this. And we were just laughing because it's so bad. But the guy's like, is this what you want? Because they're arguing. And it's just like, there's no music. He's like, is this what you want? Is this what you want? Is this what you want? He says it three times. And the third time, Jen and I just bust a gut laughing. I would say watch Church People.
Church People. Yeah. Is that a modern movie?
Yeah, it came out in the last couple of years. It's good.
Let me look it up.
It doesn't take as many chances as I'd like to see in movies, but it's very good. But with crowdsourcing, you know, like...
Donald Faison's in it.
Yeah.
Stephen Baldwin.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's...
And one of the NSYNC guys is in it.
I can't verify that yet.
So I would actually recommend that. Link below if I can find a place where you can watch it.
Joey Fatone.
It's Joey Fatone. Is it good? No. But is it a good Christian movie? I'd say so. And most Christian movies suck. But I get what you mean, this movie doesn't feel like it's taking risks. It could be. I'm not saying that this is the case. But it could be that... What's the director's name? Writer director?
Najib Majidi.
Because he's filming in Iran, because the new, more open government president hasn't been elected yet, that won't be till next year. They're still in this caliphate from 1989, so it's been almost a decade of this. It could be that he didn't feel like he could take risks. Mm-hmm. But I still think, even without taking risks, this movie still has so much heart, so much more heart than so many movies and shows that I watch that don't take risks.
It has attempts at heart, Nelson.
I think it's got it. I don't, like, it, this it never, feel like a Hallmark movie.
It never, oh, this is way, like, I've been more moved by a Hallmark movie. Actually, just last month, I was. It was the one where they all go on the road trip because they're trying to get from Colorado to Seattle, another Northwest area. And they're all stuck in a van together. And they're just like, you get to know each person. Like, I was more moved by that.
Yeah.
It was still cheesy. Yeah. Still very much cheesy. But, like, by the end of it, I'm like, that was great.
I wouldn't say that this movie's cheesy.
No. I could have used some cheese. I think cheese would have helped it.
I think that that's actually the success of it, where it's got a lot of heart without being cheesy. It doesn't take risks. You're absolutely right. No. It's not a challenging movie by any... It's a bowl of chicken noodle soup.
Right, but, like...
It's just comfort.
It's comfort, but, like, it's not new comfort. It didn't do anything that was groundbreaking. It didn't do anything that I hadn't seen before. So there was nothing in this film I'm going, wow, that was refreshing. I've not experienced a kid trying to please his younger sister before.
I think that this movie portrayed the wealth and poverty disparity of third world countries better than I've ever seen in a movie. More accurately than I've ever seen in a movie.
Okay.
That, for me, was
big. Have you not seen the movie Hulk with Edward Norton? He runs through the villages.
He makes some strong points.
I've been to Brazil, so like I can. But just, I don't know. Call me a scumbag. I don't care.
You're a scumbag.
Like,
I don't care.
Like, thank you. I felt like there, not even risks. There was no. A good movie has to have a struggle. And like, the struggle in this movie was a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And, not that they can't be, like, okay, the Christmas song, the Christian Christmas song.
Okay.
Sir, I want to buy these shoes for my mama. Please. That song.
Keep going.
No, I don't want to get off the payroll that we make from these episodes. That movie gets me more emotional than this 90-minute movie.
I want
movie
you to know,
notes.
Jeff, because I don't know if you know this. The only time that's going to be an issue for us would be on YouTube, which we still don't get money on.
Oh, I know. I'm being optimistic, okay. Nelson. Right. 17 years from now, when we're on episode 300 and some.
Yeah.
No, it'll be like 500 and some.
Of the top 250.
We could be monetized at that time. And then people will go in backlog. Anyways, that song, that 4-minute song, has way more emotion and depth and challenge and risk than this movie, which is the exact same precipice.
Okay.
Principle. Struggle. Challenge.
So, this, I think, might be, I don't know if you've experienced poverty like they've experienced.
I haven't.
I mean, like, even like secondhand, like interacted with poverty of this scale.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes. I've definitely, okay. Yeah, I have interacted with poverty.
There, before, yes. I tried to find the source on this cause I can't remember where I first heard it, but I thought it was such an excellent point. The poorest of the poor, what they need for transportation is shoes. Once you have reliable shoes, then the next step up is bicycle, then motorcycle, then car, and then jet. And it's actually several cars before you get to jet, and then it's several jets.
And then it's a spaceship.
They have
Elon Musk.
A bicycle that the father uses to get to work, and we do see it, but it gets mangled.
That was a suspenseful scene.
That was very suspenseful.
I was being sarcastic.
I thought so. I thought it was suspenseful because this is how he gets to work. This is how he provides for his family, this bicycle. These kids each have a pair of shoes. That's it. He also has a pair of house slippers, which is very common for the culture. You don't wear your shoes inside, but you might have indoor sandals. And they're breaking the rules by him wearing his sandals half the way out to school, and she's borrowing his shoes. They have one pair of shoes between them, and they don't want to tell their parents about this because they know that they can't afford another pair of shoes. That's how tight this budget is of this family.
I get that.
I thought that that was a very... although that's a level of poverty that I can't relate to, I've never personally experienced it. It is a level of poverty that I've witnessed a lot of. And I thought it was very believable. A believable struggle. The stakes were not life and death. But the stakes were like, we might not eat this week if we have to buy a pair of shoes.
I'm fully aware of what they were presenting in the setting and stuff. Like, but again, like this movie didn't do anything that hadn't been done before. And I think that's the part that wasn't refreshing, wasn't encouraging. Like I have not seen this movie, so I could be completely off on how this movie, I'm checking something here real quick on this movie before I say it.
Mm-hmm.
Slumdog Millionaire.
Never seen it.
I have not either.
I know what it is.
I have not. It's not on the top 250.
Is it based on a true story?
No, neither is this.
No, I was just
like,
curious.
No, not that I know of. It could be, but I don't know. But like that movie shows a child like poverty. Like, yeah. And I've seen clips from it. Like I remember being in school and they like it's like
extreme poverty.
I'm not against this movie.
Right.
What I don't understand and the part I'm having a hard time getting and the part that I can't invest in is the fact that this movie, this 90 minutes, this Children of Heaven did nothing innovative. Did nothing that was refreshing, did nothing new that I haven't seen before. Even though Slumdog Millionaire came out afterwards, like this movie, Children of Heaven, was not the first time that poverty was depicted in films, and you had an emotional attachment to it.
Yeah.
So beyond them showing poverty.
Yeah.
I couldn't invest in this movie.
I thought the movie was very refreshing in its...
I'm glad you did.
I really enjoyed it. It's just heartwarming. It's a beautiful look at Iranian culture. Beautiful look at the wealth disparity in third world countries. There is no middle class.
I could have used more.
There's extreme poverty and there's wealth and that's it.
I could have used more like in depth in like into like their lifestyle into their I wanted more from that. Like I thought I even thought the character building was basic. Like I didn't get to know the mom.
There's no character development. No, none of the characters.
I don't know. Like,
and yeah. So I agree with all of your criticisms, and despite all that,
I just found it
very emotionally engaging. And I couldn't help but become invested in it.
I'm glad. I'm glad for you. Like,
there was a line that it moved my heart. The father gets home from work. He's breaking the sugar up into little pieces.
Yes.
And the daughter brings him some tea. And he says, at work, I serve tea all day. But Zara's tea has a special taste. And I thought that was, I thought the family dynamics were beautiful in this. I thought the generosity was beautiful in this. You know, they're 6 months behind on rent. they can't afford hardly anything, but still there's another family who has a woman that's bedridden, and so they make her soup. Like, just, I loved the radical generosity in this. I loved the heart. I loved how much the brother was brokenhearted that he lost his sister's shoes and everything that was going to mean for her, and how he did everything in his power to fix that. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a beautiful story. It's not challenging. It's not complicated. It's, you know, there's no real depth to it. It's a very one-dimensional movie, and yet it just captivated me.
And I am glad for it.
Yeah. Also, the beginning there, the shoes being repaired.
I believe they call it a tailor. No.
Cobbler.
No, that's a pie. Gotcha! Set you up and you took the bait! Woohoo! Yes, it's a cobbler.
That's very good. I like that. Thanks. Let's do more of that.
Tim, the shoe man tailor. That's what they call me.
So he repairs the shoes, and the cost for the shoe repair was 30 tomans.
And there's an N at the end of that? Tomans.
So in the subtitles that I was watching, it was T-O-U-M-A-N-S. Mm. But when I Googled it, it's T-O-M-A-N-S.
Oh, gosh, I can't even spell right in this movie.
So Iranian toman is a denomination, but not an official one.
Presbyterian or?
A denomination of wealth.
Oh,
so the Iranian,
so Baptist.
The Iranian currency is the rial, R-I-A-L-S.
I've heard of that.
And one toman is worth 10 rials.
Okay.
And I couldn't find super great, like, this was what it was worth in 1996. But basically what that worked out to is, like, about a one U.S. penny.
Oh, that's a good deal.
That's the level of, like, just the poverty here, right?
I'll take all my shoe work to him.
So one, 10 reals is one toman. But apparently toman is, like, more common than reals for, like, how they exchange their currencies. So they'll use it in fifth, half, 1, 2, 5, 10, 25, and so on. And the banknotes for reals go up into the hundreds of thousands. So that's how much their currency is debased. It's just like $100,000 real.
It's like the yen
note. Yeah.
Up there with the yen.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting.
So I've got something I want to talk about in this film. I know we're not on my soapbox anymore. There was something in this film that sparked a little bit of thought for me, and it's just the idea of, like,
sparked joy,
childhood. No, okay. Just curiosity.
Yeah.
You're curious. No, this movie did not spark any joy.
Really?
No. Like, I just
not
like
at
it,
all.
Because, like, it the story's been done before.
I think it's just because you had to read too much. And you resented no, it.
I appreciated it. I'm already two books in this year. I've read one book. I've listened to two.
I heard of a book.
I looked at some book titles on a website. No, like,
and the one,
like,
book you did read was One Fish, Two Fish.
Childhood. Which is a great book. It's a good segue into my, like, Dr. Seuss, man. He needs to be canceled, though. He wasn't a real doctor.
He wasn't a real Zeus.
He wasn't a real Seuss. No, obviously in poverty, this isn't coming from experience, but, like, it is coming from secondhand experience and just observation of other things and stuff. Like, lifestyle's different.
Yeah.
And expectations are different for growing up and, things that are accessible is different, and childhood's different. So, I mean, just getting, like, childhood's different, marriage is different, adulthood's different. Your geriatric age is all different because of wealth and money and stuff, and, you know, just, sure, and just environment and culture and economy.
Yeah.
But just the idea of childhood and stuff, and kind of, and bringing it here to the States, which I'm familiar with, mm-hmm, I struggle with, and this could be way off topic, but I thought of this during the movie and I just want to bring it up. I struggle with sports and the intensity at which a lot of students from very early ages invest 7 days a week of their life into sports or something that's not like, I don't know how to end that sentence, but like that's
sports and academics, unhealthy amounts. Right, like, okay, I don't
see it as much in academics. Like, you don't see kids spending 7 days a week at a library, but you do see kids seven days a week going to pitching class, going on a traveling league, going on a school league. You do see
them 7 hours a day, 5 days a week in a building that resembles prisons.
7 days a week? Or you said 5 days
a week? 7 hours a day, 5 days a week.
7 days, okay. Like, but like, I...
And then hours at home as well. So, unpaid labor, by the way.
Well, someone gets paid. I struggle with like the loss of childhood.
Yeah.
And again, I can't adhere.
No, I agree.
But I can't relate to your perspective on the academic thing because like I felt like I had a childhood and I went to school. So like I can't relate to what you're saying. But in the sports thing, like
yeah. I pause real quick because what I mean by that is now as an adult looking at how high schoolers are approaching academics, I think is a totally different thing than when I was that age.
Oh.
Okay. Because I just, as you know, I walked with a group of boys from sixth grade through to graduation.
Respectfully and legally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, irreverently at times. I'm just kidding. But
yeah, no, good group of guys.
Their academics, their dedication to their academics.
Yeah. You had a very academic crew.
And athletic. Yeah.
Yes.
Every single one of them. Super athletic and super academic. And their dedication of both, I found, was very different from what I saw around me when I was their age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, myself specifically, like I was a bad student and I didn't do sports. So like I can't be a case example to compare to, but even compared to what I saw around me. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, let these kids have a childhood.
I agree. Like, and I will say, like, I'm not anti-sports. I'm not anti-school sports. I'm not anti- structured athletic programs that have competition. I'm for all that.
Right.
But like I have family members who are not even into the junior high age that are so like that's their that like they don't go outside and play imaginary stuff. Like they're at a young age they're going out and I gotta go hit the tee for 20 minutes and then I gotta go catch balls. Like their childhood is now sports practices every day.
Yeah.
And like, just like, again, if they're enjoying themselves,
sure.
Okay. But they're also like, they're traveling, like their travel leagues, they go from a travel league to a school league to a travel league mm-hmm. on Sundays, on evenings. Like, it's just like their world is now revolved around athletics. And I struggle with that. And I look at them, I go like, are you having a childhood or are you having like a athletic career as a minor, and I can't differentiate the two.
So like, in the US,
I struggle with.
I think part of what feeds into that in America is our athletic scholarships, because even if you're not going to be a professional baseball player, you can, if you really apply yourself, get to school for basically free.
Right.
In Canada, it's even more bizarre because all of that athletic childhood
is just hockey.
It's just hockey. It is.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
It's like just hockey.
You get some baseball out there.
Some baseball, basketball in pockets, lacrosse if curling? You're wealthy. No, that's more like beer league.
Competitive igloo building? But
the weird thing with hockey in Canada is that you can't even get athletic scholarships.
Oh, okay.
Like athletic scholarships don't exist in Canada.
Are there universities and stuff in Canada? I know it sounds like a dumb question.
Yeah, but athletic scholarships don't exist. So okay, if you're going to do really well at hockey, it's because you're trying to get to the NHL. That's it.
Okay, like there's not colleges or universities in Canada that have competitive hockey leagues that are out recruiting students for their college hockey team.
Now, colleges have hockey teams. That's not uncommon. But if you're playing for the college hockey team, it's because you're not good enough to be in a pro league.
That is very different than America.
It's very different.
It's interesting.
Or
I don't necessarily disagree with that.
You might be good enough to be in a pro league, but you have different goals, ambitions. So that's
okay.
So the incentive structure in America, it's easy to say, oh, it's all because of the academic scholarships. But when we compare that with Canada, and we still see kids spending their entire childhood on hockey, getting up at the crack of dawn, practicing late into the night in travel leagues, not playing for the schools because that doesn't really exist in Canada for that, but playing, you know, kids, like most of my friends, because I didn't play hockey, but almost all of my friends did. And almost all my friends.
Yeah, your teeth look really good, by the way.
Thank you. Actually, my hockey playing cousins and friends probably have better teeth than me still, even though half theirs are fake. But my
they're natural.
It's weird because that all that same stuff still exists. And what's the goal? You ask a kid, why do you play like this? Because I want to make it to the NHL. I remember my freshman year, or as we call it in Canada, grade 9.
You guys don't have like names for your 4 high school years?
No.
That's cool.
We also don't do 9th grade. It's grade 9.
Do you do 10th grade?
No, it's grade 10.
Okay, so it's consistent across all of them.
Yeah, just the 9th one.
Okay. I didn't know. Like, you're specifically talking about 9th grade.
Americans
will
say first grade, and Canadians say grade 1.
Oh, that's neither here nor there for me.
Yeah. So my grade 9 homeroom teacher, all the guys in the class already knew, because he is one of the best travel hockey coaches in the area. So everybody already knew him. And he knows these kids, he knows these guys, he knows which one of them actually have enough talent to play in a minor league, right? Because none of them are going to make it to the big league. And I remember it was in that year, early in the year, one of the kids he did poorly on a test, and his reason was, I couldn't study because I had travel league. And he thought that Mr. Arsenault would be sympathetic because he's a hockey coach. And Mr. Arsenault gave the entire class a long lecture. He says, how many NHL teams are there? How many players are on those teams? How many new players join the league every year? How many people are trying to? How hard do you actually have? Like, if you want to do this, you have to give your entire life to it. And it's already too late. You're already not going there. So you got to take this seriously. You need to educate yourself.
Mm.
And I thought that was really interesting. So it's weird because, like, on the one hand, yeah, I agree. Kids should have a childhood. But, like, in Canada, they all want to play hockey.
And
a lot of that's because they grew up with their dads who played hockey, right. And their dads love hockey.
I'm all about, like, the focused passion, even at a younger age. But, like,
yeah.
I see it even with some of my youth students and some of just church students in general. Me growing up, and again, these are my biases. So, like, right. I do want to say, like, I'm not coming at you with, like, facts or going, like, it's wrong. Like, no, these are just,
right.
it's an uncomfortable place. It's an uncomfortable place for me because I don't get it.
Yeah, I want kids to play.
Like,
except, and you would agree, except as long as it's not in the snow, right?
Right. Like, yeah. Like, I struggle with, like, I grew up in a family that, like, if the church was open, we were there.
Right.
Back in the day when we had Sunday evening services.
Yeah.
Both of my parents worked at the church at some point. So we were there even when there was not an event going on. Wednesday nights, Sunday mornings, and then weekend events or whatever. Like, and for me, like, one of the things growing up was, like, okay, you can be involved with whatever, club, sport, whatever.
Right.
Church comes first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Church comes first. And I was like, okay, I get that. And growing up, mm-hmm. that rule was passable for all the people I interacted with. Like, my band teacher, I wasn't in sports, but I also knew people who were in sports that were still at church every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And, like, their parents had the same rules.
Yep.
So I knew it flew.
Yeah.
I knew that you...
It wasn't just your parents.
Right. You can skip to go to church. You can, right. you can put church ahead.
Yeah.
Like, nowadays, you see church being put aside.
Yeah.
You Sunday... And it goes... And it doesn't just go to, like youth group. It's Sunday mornings.
Yeah.
Like, there's games on Sundays. There's travel leagues on Sundays.
In our youth group, for years now...
travel on Sundays.
Yeah. Well, once they get to their senior year, they basically disappear from youth.
Yeah. And like, and for me, it's like, in the same reason you were talking about hockey, like I'm not anti-sport, but just like, what's the chances of you going into major sports leagues outside of high school? Minimal.
I would say in the U.S., what is your chance of getting an athletic scholarship?
Right.
Quite high.
But what's your chance of your faith thriving once you leave high school?
Yeah, not great.
Right. Yeah. And so for me, that's where it burns.
Right.
Because like, I see these kids who are like, they're cool when they come to church. They're active when they're there.
Right.
But, like, you know, like the moment something sports related comes up, they're like, oh yeah, I got to bail.
Right.
And and are you going to raise kids then that are going to put sports ahead of, like, just like, I know.
I will say my group of guys, even though I basically didn't see them their senior year because they were always at a basketball or baseball function. They're still like when they're home for the holidays and I see them on a Sunday morning, like these kids are worshiping.
That's awesome. Like, I love that.
But I would say that's the exception. That's not common.
No. And like, that's where my struggle is. That's another one of my soapboxes. Like, I love sports. Like, I love going to sports shows. Like, because it's entertainment. Sports is entertainment. Sports is entertainment. Should be a t-shirt.
Yeah, in fact, I think the NFL got out of some legal struggle by clarifying that they are not, in fact, a sport. They are entertainment. And so they actually have a legal right to rig their games.
And I think my not hate, because I do enjoy a good competition, but like my unfaithful opinion is also because like you see a lot of foul play when it comes to professional sports. Like, sure. You see a lot of money being used for like things like, and like you see athletes making millions of dollars, whereas people who are sacrificing their lives, not even like police or government officials, like I'm talking like doctors and stuff, like people that are not controversially, like, you know, we're wanting to defund, like they're getting paid way less and they're way more valuable than people that are like entertaining. And I will take this opinion into movie stars as well too. So like, I will get off my soapbox of sports and also go into actors and actresses as well. Like, I would love to see people who are actually doing like, I don't know. I put it on a scale of life changing, and I feel like athletes shouldn't be paid as much as they're getting paid for entertainment versus people who are putting their lives on the line, that are getting their hands dirty, that there's just a little bit more weight to their value to society. Again, I was at a hockey game this past week. I love it. I just feel like it's over obsessed, and it trickles down into youth. It trickles down into childhood, and something like this idea of stardom and fame and this sports, music, acting, actor, like it takes over.
Yeah.
And we lose sight of something that's more valuable. Sorry, two soapboxes for me today. No, I apologize.
I'm going to touch on a few things there because I think you're tapping into something really, really important and powerful. But I do want to clarify, when it comes to celebrities and income, if you're not defrauding anybody, I think whatever salary you can negotiate, more power to you. Value is subjective. And so, for example, why is it that diamonds, which have almost no life-saving power, sells for so much.
Right.
And water, which is essential for survival,
yeah,
you can get for free, or basically free. It's because value is subjective. The price we pay for things, the price that we're willing to pay for things, willing is the really important word there,
mm-hmm,
is so much not about what we find utility in, but what we find value in.
Yeah.
So a doctor, teacher, policeman, all of these are essential services. Them being paid less than a guy that can run real fast, I understand why that's frustrating to some.
But you're for it though.
I'm
putting words in your mouth. I'm just kidding.
It's not that I'm for it. It's just like, hey, if somebody's willing to pay you that much to run real fast, congratulations, man. You take that back.
Does it bother you?
I would say that there's a few things that bother me with professional sports as far as like the funding goes. Stadiums are usually taxpayer funded.
Yep. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Right? And with the promise that the money's going to go back into the community, which and it does create jobs.
It creates jobs
that also aren't making millions of dollars as the
so for example
athletes.
Columbus, the downtown area where the stadiums are.
The city?
Yeah.
Not the guy. Not Christopher.
The director, Christopher
Columbus. Director, Christopher Columbus.
The city of Columbus, Ohio. You know, I've been there for hockey games, and the downtown area is busy.
Yeah, it's popping.
Right before and after the hockey game.
Yeah.
Right? So it does drive commerce.
Agreed.
However, if that's going to be the case, then you're almost certainly going to be able to solicit private investors. You don't have to make it a taxpayer funded thing.
Right. Oh, 100%.
But then 100%. That taxpayer funding paying for the stadium, that becomes a financial offset where they can now offer larger and larger contracts to the players. So if the NFL wasn't taxpayer subsidized, player contracts would probably be quite a bit lower.
Mm-hmm.
But also, even on the other side of that, we have player contract caps. You're not allowed to offer them more than a certain amount.
Yeah.
And so I think you get rid of both. Let the teams offer whatever they want, but make them pay for their own stuff. Don't make that taxpayer subsidized.
I agree with that.
So I would argue that we don't know what players should actually be paid because the market for what they're paid is so distorted by government interference there. Mm. Now, the other thing you were saying about our obsession with celebrity culture, Bob Dylan, when he became a Christian, one of the songs he wrote, which I think is brilliant, he talks about how you're going to worship something. And if you don't worship God, you're going to worship something.
Right.
In America, actually, throughout history, we have a tendency to worship our political rulers.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's explicit and sometimes it's behavioral and we wouldn't call it worship.
Yeah.
But when we look at what a definition of worship is, it's worship.
And you see it in the Old Testament too. Like God says, you guys don't need a king. Like you don't need someone. Oh, yeah. And they're like, no, give us a king. Like,
yeah.
So like,
cause that's I would say the desire to have a king, a ruler, that's idolatry of a sort.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so
I like where you're going with this.
So I would say, yeah, the way we seem to idolize, and I'm using that word specifically, and I think that even in our culture, we use that term, and I don't think it's an exaggeration. We idolize celebrities. Why? Because we don't want to worship God, and they're the new aristocracy.
Yeah.
We look at them, we say, oh, isn't that amazing? I want to be like that. And you worship it, and you wake up thinking about it. You go to sleep thinking about it. The first thing people do when they wake up is they're looking at their phones and they're scrolling through Instagram and they're seeing what all these influencers are doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's why it is. It's because it's built into our nature to worship.
To have something, yeah.
And as Bob Dylan said, you're going to worship something.
Yeah. I'll get off of this, but just I like sports. I think a lot of good things can come from being under a coach, learning how to work as a team. Like there's a lot of good things that come from it. It's like, I'm not anti-sports. I'm not anti-professional sports. Like, there's just moments in personal life and in stuff where I struggle. And I go like, are you having a childhood? Like, are you going to look back when you're 30 years old and go, man, I had a good childhood?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you going to look back and go, man, I worked real hard as a kid?
Ryan Reynolds.
And going back to the movie, like, I felt for the kid's name. What was the kid's name?
Ali.
I felt for him because, like, he didn't have a choice. Kids pursuing sports here in America, kids that come from with having their needs met, they have a choice.
Right.
Ali did not have a choice.
No.
I felt for
his community because they're all playing soccer and they want him to come play soccer. Yeah. And he's like, I can't. My mom's sick.
And I fell for that. And I just like he's gotten stripped of his childhood. Not by choice, but by requirement. Right. Here in America, and I'm guilty of it. Like there was things in my childhood that I definitely idolized. I definitely made sacrifices for that I shouldn't have, and I missed out on some things because it was dumb.
Yeah.
I am guilty of this. And I'll probably be guilty of this with my daughter as well, too, trying to push her towards something at a younger age than I probably should. I'm not going to do this perfectly, and I'm not going to...
No, you're human.
Right. But, like, it just... I hope that people call me out on it if they see this in me as a friend. Like, this is my invitation to you, Nelson, as a friend. So, like, if you see me, like...
I'm glad you brought this up, because there's something I've been meaning to talk to you about.
I'm unplugging the microphone here real quick. Like, but just... But, yeah, like, just... I see value in sports. I see value in team building. I see value in team structures as children.
Yeah.
But... The difference of Ali, who is required to do it for his well-being, versus us as students who now are we're still neglecting our childhood for work, that hurts.
You know what's crazy too is like for most of history, if all of your needs were met, what resulted was you became an intellectual. You became a brilliant mind. You studied, you did science. You engaged in the natural sciences and philosophy. You found a way to, if your needs were met as a child, you spent your productive hours, instead of trying to develop wealth for the family, develop your mind. And man, that's not our culture today, is it?
No, it's...
And like, so I was teasing a friend of mine because we were playing Dungeons & Dragons online. And he turns on his webcam and he's like, oh, one sec, I'll be right back. And he's in his bedroom and he lives like a normal bachelor, and he looks like he hadn't showered that day. And he comes in with a bottle of whiskey and an oven pizza. And I was like,
that's a great night.
And I said to him, Jacob, most people would look at you and say, oh, this guy, like, that's kind of like lower class. But right now you're living better than most of the kings of history. A pizza in 30 minutes, a bottle of liquor, a warm room, instant communication with people thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
And Jacob, I know you're listening to this. Do better.
Yeah. We expect so much better for you. We
expect so much more of you. But like...
That's an interesting perspective. I appreciate that. Yeah. Can I ask you something else? Can I pick? Okay. Okay, cool.
Okay. I suppose so.
Going on just this is more of just a question. I don't have a soapbox on this, but just because like this movie deals with poverty.
Yeah.
Can we in our lifetime see a world without poverty? Is it impossible to save the world from poverty? Like, or is it one of these things that like generation after generation, we're always going to be fighting poverty? And this is just another question I had while watching this movie. Just like, poverty's always been a thing. Mm-hmm. Is it something we can solve? Or like, and I know this is super vague, but like, is it an impossible task? Because we have poverty here in the States, not even looking outside of our own borders.
Even the poor in America live better than most of the kings of history, to be honest.
No, agreed.
But yeah, we do have poverty.
But there are people here in America that are not meeting the first couple needs of the hierarchy of needs. Like
we don't have extreme poverty in America.
By
the standards of what they call extreme poverty.
Correct.
In fact, extreme poverty in America has been on a steady decline for a very long time. However, when you tell everybody you're not allowed to work, stay in your home, and your job isn't essential, the people that are on the tightest margins suffer the most and suffer the first. And so I believe, I may be mistaken about this, but I believe extreme poverty went up for the first time in a very, very long time.
In 2020.
It might have been late 2020, 2021, but as a result of what happened. And the thing that changed extreme poverty in world history, the thing that basically made it disappear, was the invention of capitalism, that you're allowed to own things and choose for yourself who you do business with. That's what ended extreme poverty in most of the Western world and continues to eliminate extreme poverty. Now, can we eliminate hunger is a question that people talk about. Elon Musk has incredible wealth. And people are critical of his wealth, saying, hey, if we took all of your money and divided that amongst all the Americans, everybody would be, I think the math works out to be like $5 richer. But people say it thinking that it's going to be substantial. When he bought Twitter, now X, somebody said to him, somebody that works for the UN said, hey, the amount that you spent on Twitter, if you had given that to us, we could have ended world hunger. And this is,
that's a weighted statement.
And that's like why we need to raise taxes.
That I'd was be cynical point. About it. Wait, what? They went and said that and then said we need to raise taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm not skeptical anymore.
Because he's with the UN, so all of his money comes from public extortion.
So it wasn't a private organization that said no. It. Okay.
And Elon Musk responded with, wow, that's an incredible statement. You know, I still have that much more money. You tell me how you're going to do it, and it's yours. And the guy couldn't give an answer. And the reason he couldn't give an answer is because he's full of shit. But also, I think it's important to acknowledge what Jesus said on the matter. In Matthew 26:11. So this is when Jesus was anointed at Bethany. So I'm starting in verse 6 here through to 13. While Jesus was in Bethany in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he reclined at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant and asked, why this waste? This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Aware of this, Jesus asked, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful deed to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. By pouring this perfume on me, she has prepared my body for burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached in all the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Now, clearly this has a lot more to do with poverty and feeding the poor. But he did.
Why do they always send the poor? Why do they always send the poor?
Oh, man. Why don't presidents go to war? But he says, the poor you will always have with you. I don't think this is a flippant passing comment.
Nothing in the Bible is.
I think he's making a significant point. And this is actually a reference to Deuteronomy 15:11, which generosity in lending and giving, starting in verse 7, Deuteronomy chapter 15. If there is a poor man among your brothers with any of the gates in the land that the Lord your God is giving you, then you are not to harden your heart or shut your hand from your poor brother. Instead, you are to open your hand to him and freely loan him whatever he needs. Be careful not to harbor this wicked thought in your head, in your heart. The seventh year, the year of release, is near. Well, that's Jubilee. So that you look upon your poor brother begrudgingly and give him nothing. He will cry out to the Lord against you, and you will be guilty of sin. Give generously to him. Do not let your heart be grieved when you do so. And because of this, the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in everything to which you put your hand. For there will never cease to be poor in the land. That is why I am commanding you to open wide your hand to your brother and to the poor and needy in your land. So God in Deuteronomy, and then Jesus again later referencing that and making the point, there are always going to be poor and needy. Capitalism has done incredible things to eliminate extreme poverty. And I believe that the more we embrace capitalism, the less and less poverty we'll see. But God and Jesus both said, you will always have poor. So I don't anticipate that we could ever.
It's not a problem we can solve.
I don't because think like, it's a problem that can be solved.
It couldn't just look different. Because I'm not comparing myself to a third world country person who has nothing. Like I'm not like, could poverty look different and still be impoverished? Like there's been times in my life where my soul's been impoverished. Again, I'm not, I know that's a weighted statement. Like I'm not saying like I'm the same as.
Right.
I've not seen that difficulty. I have not. But like, could we solve world hunger and malnutrition, but the poverty that God's still talking about still be a thing to where like, Yeah, there's still going to be deprivation. There's still going to be
scarcity,
but not when it comes to sustenance. Like, can there still be poverty without people going hungry?
To quote Gandhi, there's enough for everyone's need, but not enough for everyone's greed. Now, he was a socialist, so I don't entirely agree with him. But it is true that 40% of the food produced in America is waste.
That's a hard fact.
That's just in America.
That's frustrating.
And if we managed to take all of that food waste and feed people with it, on paper, it's like, oh, we could end world hunger. But the problem is, well, how do you get it to those people? Because the people that need it aren't in America. Otherwise, you could just give it to them. I used to work with an organization that would go around to all the grocery stores and collect the produce that was no longer fit to be sold. And we'd pick through it. And anything that was still usable, we would give to soup kitchens and battered women's shelters. And the rest would go to a pig farm. But you still need the infrastructure to get it there, right? Mm-hmm. We scoff at it now, but it, you know, it really was something that we all heard. You know, finish your dinner, there's starving kids in Africa.
I heard that so many times.
Yeah, okay, well, take what's left on my plate, put it in a Ziploc bag.
Send it to Africa.
Send it in the mail. And that kind of exposes that the issue isn't just the greed.
Right.
The issue isn't just greed.
It's logistics.
How do you get it there?
Yeah. How do you change the climate in the country? How do you change irrigation? Do you move a culture? Do you move them to somewhere else that has their needs met? Like, and it's just
in doing disaster relief and working in third world countries, a lot of it's this survival mindset. My dad scoffed at my idealism of meeting all the needs of starving and hungry people. He grew up in Africa on the mission field. And he said, you know, it doesn't really make sense that we go and build all these wells in Africa. They've already got wells. What they need to do is build their mud huts a little closer to the water. He's right.
Yeah.
Now, he also wouldn't begrudge you for building the well. Like when people scoffed at Mr. Beast going and building a bunch of wells because that's the government's job. And it's like, no, he just helped all these people. But also, you know, as we saw with here in Deuteronomy 15, 7 through 11, the poor will always be there. And we are to, and that is why we are to be radically generous.
Yeah.
We can't fix the problem with our generosity. The problem will always be there. And we need to be generous nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of generosity, if you guys subscribe to our Patreon, we guarantee that all money that we receive will go towards Nelson and I.
We haven't collected a single cent from that yet. That's just been building there.
We're still trying to break even.
We're still trying to decide how we want to go about handling it. But we do know that once we start withdrawing from that Patreon fund that you guys so generously give to, we will also be giving you the opportunity to decide where a tenth of that goes to. We're going to tithe the money that is given to us and make sure that that goes on to resources that we find beneficial, and hopefully you do as well.
Absolutely.
Should we get into wrap-up?
Did you have anything? I feel like I dominated all the talking points and stuff. Was there anything?
I got out everything I wanted to talk about with this movie. There's not a lot of meat to it.
Mostly bread.
But what's there I thought was beautiful. You know, these people are on the absolute margins and still they found ways to be generous. You know? Then we saw them being the recipients of massive generosity while still upholding their dignity. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think that's a really beautiful aspect of this movie.
Let's get into wrap up. Nelson, would you recommend this movie?
I certainly would.
Okay.
I don't think you would though. If somebody asked you, Jeff, I haven't seen any Iranian films this year. Do you have any recommendations?
This would be it. This is the best Iranian film I've ever seen. Not a movie based in Iran, but a movie produced in Iran. Like,
it's also based in Iran.
Right, but I'm just saying, like,
or Iran.
Maybe I've seen movies that take place in Iran.
Iran so far away.
But yeah, I didn't hate what it stood for. I actually liked what they were going for. It was very clear what they were trying to speak.
Yeah.
And I liked that.
Yeah.
Honestly, this would be a movie that I would show in, like, this would be like a school friendly movie or like an academic setting friendly movie on economy, on poverty.
Yeah.
On just, you know, making good choices, moral choices. Like I think there's good places that this movie can exist. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to spoiler alert a little bit, but it answers this question. Like, what breaks my mind is the fact that this is on the 250.
Yeah. Like, you don't think it belongs there.
No, like movies can have good intentions, good morals, good goals.
Yeah.
But like nothing in this movie was, I was moving into the fact that it should even be talked about. And I'm just surprised it's on the radar.
Right.
Like, I'm glad it is. It's a good movie, good message.
Top 250, but like, it's in the top 250 after they updated the algorithm to get rid of foreign films.
Right. So, it's not that I wouldn't recommend it. It's just, there's nothing in this movie that they do better than any other movie. Or like, there's nothing in this movie that's profound. So like, this isn't going to be the first movie I'm going to recommend when it comes to like poverty, or like, I need to go watch Slumdog Millionaire. Like, I know there's other movies that deal with, coming from nothing and gaining everything type of story, like overcoming, like the premise of this movie is not new. And so there's nothing in it where I'm going, yeah, this movie's going to change your life. It's not. This movie won't change your life, in my opinion.
Sure.
So I don't know if I would recommend it. If someone says they saw it, I'm like, oh, I saw it too. And I would talk to them about it.
Right.
But it's not going to be the first movie I'm going, you need to watch this. Would you change the rating? PG?
No, not at all.
Yeah. It's very clean.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple of minor obscenities. Like some of the minor swear words, but I think it's just twice if I remember right. But I don't even remember those. It's not even, yeah, it's, this movie is family friendly. It's from a kid's perspective. So children can enjoy this movie, I think if I was a child, maybe I'd have a different perspective of this movie. Cause like, I can't relate to children anymore. So maybe there's more depth to it. If you get into the mind of a child and just the depth of what that child was going through.
Right.
Maybe I would recommend it to a child or like a school group or something. The rating is great. Has it aged well?
I think it has.
26 years old.
Yeah.
It looks like a school project film. Yeah. It hasn't changed a bit.
I asked Jen, is this what your childhood looked like? You know, except for the language. And she's like, yeah, like this is like the level of development, what the poverty looked like, all of that.
The travel, the street vending and all the sounds and stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. Like what she grew up with in Latin America.
Yeah. Nelson.
Yes, sir.
Would this be in your top 250?
I think it might, but it would be on the lower end.
Okay. This would not make my top 250.
I think I give it a 4 to 5 stars.
Yeah, I mean that's, and I admire your marking on that. Like,
yeah.
Not that you need my admiration, but like, I'm glad that you see that movie this way. I'm cold hearted, but maybe this
maybe
movie just couldn't penetrate my heart and get to my dirty scumbag soul. But why do you think this film? This is the one I want to sit on for a little bit.
Yeah,
what is in this movie that makes it top 250 worthy? This movie feels like a class project. This is not big budget. This is not big cinema. This is not what is in this movie that keeps it holding on? I can't answer this question.
Yeah.
I can't answer this. I don't know.
I think that this movie is very... I would not be at all surprised to find out from most of the Muslim world that this movie feels like their childhood, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything that they grew up with. You know, it's how their parents acted. It's the poverty that their parents struggled with. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And the Muslim world is a significant portion of the human population.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's probably a large contributing factor here.
Yeah.
I think you'd also have, so for example, people our age who were born and grew up in Europe, but their parents are immigrants from the Muslim world. They show this to their kids and like, this is what it was like.
I get that. I can understand right? that. Yeah.
So I think I wouldn't be at all surprised to find out that this movie has a special place in the heart of a lot of people.
Yeah. That makes sense. I did not think of it like that. That makes sense. Well, I want to give a shout out real quick before we get into next week. Shout out to our buddy Tim.
Yes.
This is week two of us being in a studio.
That's right.
The first of it, like the first for us.
Yeah.
And
we've got some work to do with sound dampening and all kinds of stuff. But
we want to give Tim a shout out, and he is going to be one of our quote unquote sponsors.
That's right.
Because of him housing us and him just showing us some love, and you know, eventually we'd love to have him on an episode eventually. But just showing us, giving us a place to room to grow.
Yeah.
And giving us some room for improvements and stuff. So, So shout out to Tim. You can find out his company, Soapboxer, and all the stuff that he does. You can find out, you can get his links to his social media and stuff below. But from here to the unforeseeable future, this is going to be our studio now.
From here to the unforeseeable future?
Right. So this, what? I mean, that's right. That's right.
Technically correct. Technically is the best correct. Kind of correct.
Yeah. but yeah, just big thanks to him. This has been a big improvement. My wife is grateful.
I'm sure she is. She was so patient with us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Yeah.
I know you listen to every episode.
She's going to be on an episode soon, with your wife as well. I am not excited for that movie, but I am excited to have our wives on for an episode. So that's going to be fun. Your wife's looking forward to it. That's Lindsay is dreading it.
We can do a different movie.
No. This one makes sense for reasons we'll get into. But next week is LA Confidential.
Yeah.
I
don't know much about it.
I don't either.
I've seen the cover of it. It's got Kevin Spacey, known child molester, and some bimbo on the cover. I don't think the actress is a bimbo. I think the character she's going to be playing is a bimbo. That's certainly what it looks like.
Is that Kim Basinger? It's Kim Basinger. I'm looking at it right now. Russell Crowe's in it. Yeah, so La Confidential.
La La Land Confidential.
La La Land Confidential. Yeah, so this is going to be, this is, I believe, a noir film.
Oh.
Or at least, like I don't know, maybe it's not, but like.
Well, crime noir is a genre that's beyond black and white.
Correct, films. Yeah, and this one is not black and white. It's very gray, very gray. Yeah. But yeah, so LA Confidential's next week. And check out the links below. Check out Soapboxer. Thank you, Tim. And in the next week or so, we're going to have for our Patreon subscribers, we're going to be giving you the next Off 250 in a week or so. So just be ready. Be on the lookout for the next episode for you to vote on, movie for you to vote on.
That's right.
That's coming up here shortly.
The conclusion to that voting will be at the end of this week.
Correct.
For us. For you and I in recording currently. So we actually don't yet know what our movie is going to be.
No.
We will know that in a couple days, but it will be announced in the next video, in the next free episode. So next week during LA Confidential, we will let you know, and it'll release that Friday.
So. Yeah. So just we appreciate that. And if you would like more say and more voice on this podcast, we would love for you to subscribe. $5 a month. That's all we're asking. It's all we need. And it would give you a bigger say on this episode. And one last thing, one of our goals this year, and Nelson didn't know I was doing this, and we can cut this if we need to, is there's a couple movies on here that we, specifically, we would love to have a journalist on for.
Yes.
And we haven't had any success finding a journalist, someone that is actively involved in journalism.
Specifically,
broadcasting,
ideally, cable news.
Yes. So if you guys know someone, if you know someone that knows someone that would be interested,
even if it's just local,
to watch a movie that has to do with broadcasting and is willing to talk to us, we're looking for someone.
That's right.
And there's some movies we're holding on to that we'd give them options for, that we would love to have their perspective
on. And we're only, what, a tenth of the way through the list?
Yeah.
So, or...
No, a fifth.
We're a fifth of the way through the list. So, you know, if it ends up waiting another year until we have a little bit more of an audience, that's fine. But there are some movies that we have dog-eared that, like, hey, we really need the insights from this caliber of person. And so what we currently are on the lookout for is somebody that has some experience in cable news broadcasting. Yeah. We'd love to hear from you if you'd be open to doing an episode with us.
Absolutely. And that's all I've got, Nelson. Do you have anything?
That's all I got.
All right. Thank you to our guest. You were great. And we'll see you next week at LA Confidential. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did.
If you found value in what we discussed today, please consider leaving us a rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
If you have any feedback or suggestions, we would love to hear from you.
That's right. Tell us why we're wrong.
If you want even more content and ways to engage with us and each other, check out our Patreon page.
By supporting us there, you'll get access to exclusive bonus content and help us continue to create high-quality episodes, as well as help pay for our future plans. Links to our social media, merchandise, and Patreon are in the show notes.